Hi, and welcome to The Rod Kirby Show, the podcast that covers the ever-expanding world of film and entertainment. Today I'm sitting down and talking to one of my most favorite indie filmmakers, Jerron Lockridge, also known as The Gorilla Filmer. Jerron's projects include web series such as The Sticks and feature films like Smith and his latest movie, Close Caption. Jerron is the definition of a true gorilla filmmaker. He writes, directs, produces, and edits his projects himself, employing local talent around the Jackson, Tennessee area. I've always admired his creative output and work ethic. I'm really excited to finally sit down and take a peek behind his filmmaking process and learn from an auteur filmmaker on the rise. During this interview, we'll discuss how Jerron balances his incredible slate of projects with family life, his writing process, top lessons learned from the production of his first film, Hongo, and much, much more. So grab your favorite snack and prepare to be inspired on today's episode of The Rod Kirby Show. Hello and welcome to The Rod Kirby Show. I'm your host, Rod Kirby, and today I have a really, really awesome guest on the show, Mr. Jerron Lockridge. Jerron, sir, welcome to the stage. How are you? What's going on, man?
I'm great, man. I'm happy to be on and be here and talk some film stuff.
Yes, sir. You know, I've been following you for a while and, cyber stalking you and all your projects, and you have a lot of projects. I mean, like, you produce like 15 movies a year or something like that, right? You're like your own Disney, you know. I don't know if you knew that, but that's how I kind of view you.
Yeah.
But when did your filmmaking journey kind of start? When did you get the bug to make movies?
Well, I've always been kind of a creative. I started in high school writing plays for our school play. That's where I really got into the writing and everything, but that was around in 2002, 2003. So YouTube and all this wasn't really happening at the moment. So, I kind of thought that was a far-fetched dream. I would have to go to LA and stuff to make it happen. So I kind of put it on the back burner for a little while. And, around 2010 or so, I started and made my first short film then. Mm-hmm. And, been kind of, off and on doing it ever since then with the making my own films and everything.
Yeah. You are affectionately known as the Gorilla Filmer. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
What does that mean to you? Why the Gorilla Filmer?
Well, it's basically because I had to, I had to learn, mostly because I had to. I just had to learn how to get a lot of my projects off the ground with absolutely minimal. And, just the term gorilla filmmaking is, to a T, exactly how, I make my films, just the whole style of everything I do. And I just, instead of looking at that as a negative, I just embraced it and, just started taking on the term gorilla filmer. And that's just my style, the way I get things done.
Now, what's the most difficult aspect of independent filmmaking for you? How do you really overcome it?
It's so many of them. I would say, budget is always going to be a restraint. But, creativity can kind of alleviate you of some of the problems that the budget presents.
Right.
Locations, is always an issue.
Always, and, yeah.
A lot of times, where I had an issue, a lot of times starting off is finding dependable cast. Because especially when you're in the no budget realm, finding, dependable people who want to be there just, to make something and, that hard, rough patch when you're first starting is kind of tricky finding people, who are dependable, at least for me it was. But right. Now, I kind of got my little network of a team of people and, we're just getting it done now. So, all those trials and stuff when I first started, it kind of made me who I am today to the point to where I know what to expect and I can kind of get my productions done with ease.
Yeah, it's almost like, I joked and said you're basically Disney, producing so many projects, but it really is kind of like that studio process where you have it kind of down pat and I'm sure you know exactly what you need, how much you need, who you can depend on, and what to do, now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you had many people approach you for producing their feature films, or do you kind of stick to your own projects?
Not many. I have had, you know, people come up, you know, usually, you know, I have this idea for a script and, you know, this and that. And, you know, I have a phone where, I kind of outline, I get an idea and I outline stories. Mm-hmm. And I have so many projects that, you know, that I know that I'm going to want to produce. So a lot of times, you know, I hope people don't take it bad when I say, you know, I just really don't have time to even try to, you know, I got so many of my own projects that I'm trying to get off the ground. Right. But, you know, I have, you know, a few here and there that, you know, approach me with an idea for a script and I tell them, you know, maybe one day, but, you know, mm-hmm. right now I got a plan, a distinct plan that I'm trying to stick to. So that's kind of usually how it goes here lately.
Right. Well, I am a new pappy, as some would say. Got me a little Rod Jr. And I have my Star Wars mug with my coffee, because if I don't drink it, I'll start slurring my speech and, you know, looking cross-eyed on camera. But you've got a little clan of your own. And how does your wife support you in your projects? I know mine goes above and beyond, you know, not just with money, but also she's behind the camera sometimes. I have mm-hmm. her doing grip. You know, she's doing lighting, and she did sound in my last short film. How does mm-hmm. your wife support you?
Oh, every step of the way. Because, I mean, you know, the majority of my projects right now are mostly being financed out of our bank account. So if she mm-hmm. wasn't on board with that, it would crash and burn before it even started. So,
right.
you know, a lot of that is just, you know, emotional support. You know, she comes on set, you know, helps me in any way possible. Mm-hmm. you know, now, you know, we're getting ready to do this show. So a lot of the pre-production process when it comes to scheduling and wardrobe stuff and breaking down these scripts, she's taking that weight off my shoulders, and I can focus on getting shot lists and stuff together. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that is a resource that you got to have, especially when you're a family man. You know, you got to mm-hmm. have your spouse involved in some way to make it a lot easier for you.
Now, I don't want to preach at you, but I believe, you know, God puts people together for a reason. And
almost definitely.
You know, clearly, you know, he gave you the best first AD, assistant director, co-producer that you could ever have in your life.
Most definitely. I strongly agree.
Yeah.
Everything's for a reason.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How do you balance all that? You know, because you working on so many shows, and just in case people don't know, I mean, you've got, you know, like four or five feature films.
Mm-hmm.
So four or five feature films, you have a series called The Sticks. You're working mm-hmm. on season two. You're mm-hmm. working on another show called Down Bad. Is that what mm-hmm. it's called?
Down Bad.
You also have a new feature film that will be coming out soon called Closed Caption.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance all that? You know, you're writing, you're producing, you know, and of course, directing. How do you balance mm-hmm. all that with the family?
Well, I mean, it's tough. I'm not even going to act like it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... And then, you know, I work full time too in a mm-hmm. career. I work law enforcement full time. So, you know, I work 12 hours and then, you know, work night shift, and then I have to get off and, you know, find time to get some type of rest and then mm-hmm. do something with the family and then try to get in some writing and this and that with, you know, my film business. So, I mean, it's all about finding that balance, trying to, you know, with me, I have to schedule. Out, I wear my calendar app on my phone out. You know, you have to schedule your time and kind of try to stick to it. And, you know, that's the only way you can manage this madness, because if you just try to, you'll get so off track. So, you know, like I got three growing boys, mm-hmm. two of them in karate, one in basketball. So it just seems like I never sit down. I'm always running, doing something. So, you know, like with these films, I try to, any little free time I get an idea, you know, like I write my outlines real, you know, like almost like a storybook. So whenever I get to the, you know, script process, I can just, you know, go off that outline and pretty much I have my story intact and just plug in dialogue. So I have my own little system that works for me. And most people, you know, that's, you know, trying to pursue this with a family and trying to find that balance, you just got to find a system that works for you and that's efficient in a way you can still, you know, do your family thing, do what needs to be done, and, you know, still do your productions or whatever it is that you're pursuing.
All right. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about your writing process. Mm-hmm. So you start with an outline and then you move on to scripting. Is that
Nope. Yeah, basically, yeah. How you work it out?
Yeah, I usually, because like, you know, I used to, especially when I was younger, you know, I daydream and talk to myself a lot. And I used to think, man, something's wrong with me. But I just didn't know that was the creative part of me, you know, because I still do that now. I get to thinking of an idea and get to talking it out, you know, acting scenes in my head. And my wife would be looking at me from the side, like, what's wrong with this guy? Yeah. But, you know, and that'll happen to me. And I'm just thinking, I write this outline now. And I write a beginning, middle, and end. I try to think of it right then. And then, mm-hmm. I might come back to the outline and refine it a little bit later. And, I mean, it's almost like a book. You can almost read it from the beginning to the end and just have the movie there. Right. When I'm done with it. And at that point, you know, it's just plugging in dialogue and fine tuning. And that's how my script process works. At least it works best for me that way.
Yeah. So with mine, I start with a general outline and I try to do like bullet points, like maybe 10 to 20 bullet points, mm-hmm. where I am I'm not really doing details. I'm just kind of doing, broad strokes of what the story is from beginning to end. And then from there, I go into the treatment. And, you know, the treatment is for, you know, those listening that may not know, a treatment is when you do pretty much what you do, mm-hmm. where you write the story from beginning to end, but mm-hmm. you have more details included. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I go into the script, actually writing the script. And I meet so many people that say, oh, man, I just got a great idea. And I just start writing the script right then and there.
Yeah.
Like, dude, how do you do that? Because yeah. for me, I get lost. Yeah. You know, I can't do that.
I've tried that, like, you know, just doing, I think they call it like the vomit draft, just going and just writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm too structured of a person. I just can't, you know, I always end up deleting what I wrote or something. So I usually try to think of, you know, at least some type of structure, even if it's bullet points or just doing that whole outline. You know, and try to think of, you know, where I wanted to start and kind of where I wanted to end, mm-hmm. and try to connect those dots through the script some way. And a lot of times, you know, writing that you may have an ending, but somewhere in the story, it may guide you or pivot you that's better for the story. And then you're ending a chain. So never get married to that idea. You know, just mm-hmm. have that as a start to keep you, you know, to get you motivated, to get you writing. And, mm-hmm. you know, usually you can crank out a story pretty, you know, efficiently, and just matters whenever you get it done.
So as a writer, director, producer, do you do like two or three different drafts of a script, or do you just write the first one and then you're like, okay, great, let's go do this, let's go shoot it today?
I as far as the rewrites and stuff, mm-hmm. because I'm, you know, I usually hear, you know, somebody get it and then they totally rewrite it, I'll try to write it. I don't know if it's, you know, efficient to do that, but, you know, when I write, you know, I don't, you know, if I like it or not, I just don't keep going. I usually correct or as I'm going, try to get it as refined as possible. Right. And then, you know, I read over it, you know, try to check over again, let somebody else give me a critique, read the script, and then go back and, you know, make sure it's not any plot holes and stuff like that. And then mm-hmm. Go through that process before I start shooting. But a lot of times, like I tell my actors, like we get on set, you know, especially being low budget, you know, like if I had this idea for a certain scene or something, you know, you get there on the day and, you know, it could be a location that fell through, and to salvage that day, you may have to pivot from what you had originally to keep that movie going. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of times where, you know, although it's scripted, we might have to, you know, pivot from, even though it, you know, that's what we had on, you know, on the script and make something to keep the story going and keep the movie, you know, from failing. So a lot of times I'll tell them, you know, this is a script, but, you know, beware, because at any time, you know, we might have to pivot, you know, it's just right. the way it is when you low budget filmmaking. So, you know, I use the script as a template and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty aware that at any time something could change, even though, you know, you got this vision for it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in general script writing, I mean, unless you're doing it for a studio, a script, in general, it should be just a template and a blueprint for where you want the story to go. I love that advice. Don't be married to, you know, exactly what you have on page, because anything can happen. The characters might lead you somewhere else when you get on set, and the actors might have a different idea for how a character or scene should play out. Anything mm-hmm. can happen. So really, you need to be flexible, you know, exactly. as a filmmaker.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just, you know, that's just especially, you know, I haven't been on a major budget set, so all I know is low budget. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, when you're, you're doing independent filmmaking, because you just never know. You just never know. So you got to have that ability to flex at a moment's notice to keep your story alive and to push forward through it.
So let's talk about some of these projects, because you got a lot, as I've said. Your first feature film was Hongo, and that was in 2017, I believe. Uh-huh. And that's when I actually, I'm not really sure how I came across it. I think it was one of your Facebook posts, and you were, you know, talking about your movie, and I was like, you know, let me check this out. And I watched it, and it's got my good friend, Everett Anderson, in there, and he's really good in that. And I really liked it. It was cool. It was a different spin on a zombie type of movie thriller, and it was really good. And I loved it. What prompted you to, instead of going, you know, the traditional route of like a lot of indie filmmakers would do, they'll write a story and they'll try to, you know, do screenwriting competitions, or they'll try to pitch it and they'll let it gestate for years and years and years. What prompted you to say, you know what, forget trying to wait on someone else, let me just go ahead and do this and put it in production? What prompted that for you?
It's just always been something that I've always had in mind to do it, because I knew that, you know, one person that I always mention as an inspiration is Tyler Perry, you know. You know, like I'm not a fan of his work per se, but I'm a fan of his drive and how he made it happen for himself. And, you know, just the way he, you know, took it upon himself to get his own projects off the ground. And that's the way, you know, when I first started, I actually had a film that was about 50 minutes before Hongo that I did called Betray. And, you know, that film taught me a lot. I tried to do it way too quick, and, you know, a bunch of friends and family to help me make that film. And, you know, when I went through that process, I actually, you know, I produced it myself, but I hired a lot of people to do these jobs. And like, you know, I had my brother who was working the camera, and then I hired an editor to edit the film and everything. And the editor for that film ended up going to the West Coast somewhere and pretty much screwing me out of my money and everything. You know, I remember feeling so helpless when that situation happened. And I was like, man, never again, you know, never again. I was getting stood up on this. I was getting stood up on that. And I just said, never again. So I started learning, you know, these skills and trying to, you know, teach myself better understanding on, you know, cinematography and editing and everything. And, you know, I wrote Hongo because I just started thinking, what do I have access to? What can I make with a pretty small cast, and what do I have access to? So I started thinking, you know, I got access to plenty of fields and stuff over here in the country. So just kind of came up with this story built around my resources. You know, cast Everett and, you know, Mike and Jeff and a lot of my cast in that. And that was a learning experience in itself. That was, you know, making that movie was kind of like my film school in a way. You know, it taught me so much about, you know, just filmmaking and getting it done, producing, casting and everything. And I always tell anybody, you know, it's my first, you know, it has its own problems, but it always be a special project for me, because it was kind of like my film school. It just, it taught me so much that I wouldn't have known if I didn't go hands on and do that project myself.
Okay. Well, look, let's take a look at the trailer for Hongo. I want folks to see how cool this is. This is Hongo, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk about it for just a few more minutes. Okay.
Okay.
So this is Hongo. Let's take a look.
Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning.
There's a possibility you may be released soon, so let's get started.
Mr. Jones, so how's it been since your release? Are you Justin okay?
Not really.
What's up?
I'm in jail. I'm not in food and shelter.
What? I've got a friend who can help.
Mr. Galargo?
I'm Jim Galargo.
Now, the job pays $500 weekly.
I can start today if you need me to, sir.
Good. That's what I wanted to hear.
Thank you.
is this?
What?
So that was Hongo. Pretty awesome trailer, right? So what are your top three lessons from producing that what you would call a no budget indie film? What are your top three lessons that you learned on that film?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, when you schedule, you know, especially when it comes to something no budget, kind of make it smaller, if that makes sense. Because one thing that I looked at with the that I critique myself on after, you know, years pass and I've, you know, grown as a filmmaker myself, a lot of the action and, you know, stuff on there, you know, could have been a lot better if I had, you know, just made it more smaller. Right. And it wasn't too ambitious in writing it. You know, that's a critique I have of myself. And just, you know, a lot of you won't ever cheat the process. You only get better the more that you do it. Right. So, you know, a lot of things that I look back on that film, like I said, it was my personal film school. I would have done a lot of things different technically and everything, but you know, I just have to, you're your own worst critic, but you also have to understand that, you know, you never achieve perfection. You only get better doing this craft by doing it over and over, and you know, and meeting people who are better than you that can teach you a thing or two. So, you know, I would say collab with people who are just as passionate as you, and you know, always be willing to grow and improve, and that's one thing that Hongo taught me more than anything. Yeah. Always be willing to grow and improve, and be a fly on the wall when people better than you are doing it.
Awesome. Yeah. You had from Hongo, you went and you did They Live in the Shadows, and then which was another feature film, and then from there you did your first series called The Sticks. Which also features Everett Anderson. I'm going to shout that dude out because he's one of my favorite local actors. All and right. A good friend of mine. But I want to take a look at The Sticks because it's really, it was like a cop procedural type of thriller type of show, right?
Yeah.
What was the production like on The Sticks? Because I heard, a little birdie told me that that you pulled your hair out on that doing production with that. So, what kind of issues and challenges did you face on that production?
Yeah, that was an ambitious project. Like, that started as a short film, mostly at the Memphis Film Prize. I had a short in there. And when I entered it, you know, even when I was writing the script, I was like, this could be something bigger. Mm-hmm. So I was starting to make plans to make that into a series, that just in case had I won that competition, I was going to use all that money to fund the series. And of course that didn't happen. So I went back to the drawing board and was like, how can I, you know, still get this made? And, you know, a lot of the people who are involved were like, man, let's just still do it. So, you know, I ended up, you know, going and casting the series. And I mean, writing a series is totally different, a totally different beast than a movie.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, totally different. And that's one thing I learned. You know, just trying to, do that thing with no budget. You know, I had so many, you know, cast members that, you know, that didn't show up. And like, I'm in the show myself, and that was totally not planned. It's basically because I had to keep that day going.
Yeah.
And, that's one thing where, you know, it shows me, like, if you, you know, especially the no budget realm, if you don't take the time out to at least, you know, go out and meet people, or, you know, IMDb, or get on these casting pages. Like, you have to actually find a lot of people who are serious, because a lot of people say they want to act. Right. You know, it's kind of like same with filmmaking. I'm a director, this and that, but a lot of people don't want to put the work in it takes to get there to do that project. So, you know, I kind of got burnt a lot. So that's why now I kind of work with a lot of people I trust. Everett, man, awesome guy. Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, it was one point on set where I guess Everett noticed that, you know, I'm about to lose it. Like, the stress is about to take me on. And he's good at coming and, you know, giving you some inspiration and like, man, it's going to be good. We going to make it. Mm-hmm. I'm here with you. And, you know, we end up pressing through and getting that series done. And, you know, it's supposed to have 8 episodes, but I was so burnt out at the end of that. I just kind of chopped up the 8th episode and packed it on the end of 7th episode. And we ended up releasing it on YouTube. And it started out hot and fizzled out for some reason. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. And then when we put it on Amazon, man, it's like right now we're looking at 5 million unique streams. So, wow. It's, you know, it was a point where I wasn't going to do a season 2, but I have like 100 inboxes right now from people. Like, I don't know who they are. Don't know where they saw the show. I'm guessing they saw it on Amazon and win season two. So since I have an audience for it, we decided to just go ahead and move forward with it, until COVID happened. And then, you know, to salvage the show, I kind of had to minimize it some more to get season 2 ready to shoot this summer.
That's awesome, man. Well, let's take a look at a trailer for season 1 of The Sticks.
We believe the cartel is centering their operations in rural Tennessee, specifically in our county. I need a real go-getter to lead this unit.
My heart sunk into my stomach when they called me from the hospital. And now you want to join a unit whose sole purpose is to stir shit up?
Pretty cool. I love it, man. That's awesome. Now I'm ready to see season 2. When's season 2 coming? I'm going to add one more to those 100 messages you got.
Hopefully it's coming to the end of the year. I'm getting it ready.
Now, you mentioned, I know you didn't think we were just going to skirt past this. You said that to get season 2 ready, you had to kind of shrink it some more, because I heard that you had to kind of rewrite the entire series. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had, after, you know, we initially wrote it, I had 10 episodes ready to go, you know, 30 pages a piece, 10 episodes ready to go. And, you know, COVID happened, of course. So, like that, I think we were supposed to shoot that in May, and, you know, the world shut down March of last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had to put it on hold. So I kind of, you know, I knew I had, you know, my days ready to film and this and that. And I just didn't want to stand by, you know, once it started getting a little better, that little part in the summer. Yeah. And I said, I'm going to write something. So I ended up writing another project that we'll probably talk about later to film in its place, and still held The Sticks season 2 on hold. And here, you know, recently when we started trying to go back to the board, you know, we ended up having some issues where some, you know, cast members who were already written in, you know, either couldn't be on the show, or it was just a multitude of issues. So I was like, here we go again. I'm about to probably have to cancel this season. And, you know, I'm just a bullheaded person. Like, whenever I get something started, I hate leaving unfinished business. So I just scrapped all 10 episodes and just started from scratch, man, and wrote 6 episodes, which, this time they're a little bit smaller, a little bit more compact, not as big of a story. Mm-hmm. And I actually think these six episodes was better than the original 10 that I scrapped. So it kind of crazy. It worked out for the better. Yeah. And I think, you know, although it's almost going on, I think we put out season one in 2018 or 2019, mm-hmm. like it's going over 2 years now since then. I think people who are actually honestly waiting for it, they'll enjoy season two when they see it.
That's awesome, man. And that just goes back to what you said earlier. You know, don't be married to what's on the page.
Yeah.
You know, be flexible and be ready to change at any time.
Exactly. And it hurts. Like, I promise you, I spent a lot of time writing these 10 episodes, but if you you love something enough, you got to keep it going one way or another.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So your last feature film was Smith. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And that was that came out in 2020. I saw it at the Indie Memphis Film Festival and loved it. You know, that was my Oprah impression. Loved it. Okay. But yeah, it was awesome. I loved it. I really did like it. And I think the thing that I told you after I saw it was, I love how creative you were. Like, you had there's a scene towards the end where a guy shoots into a car and you had the glass, you know, bursting into the car like a bullet would. Mm-hmm. And the way that you shot it just looked great. It was effective. Mm-hmm. And it probably, I assume it only took you maybe 30 minutes to do that scene.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it took us probably about 30. It probably took us a lot longer to clean up all that sugar glass out of my car. But yeah, it was one of the scenes that I had planned out that I knew I wanted that effect. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're not going to shoot a real car window out. Right. So, you know, just had to, you know, get a little creative. And I found this site where you can get this shattered glass. And, you know, you when you hit it, it kind of just shatters like that. So, and it worked out perfect for that scene.
Yeah. And I want folks to know, I'm not, you know, shading you, you know, you did it in 30 minutes or less. I'm just, I'm just amazed at how, in a big budget Hollywood movie, the setup for that scene probably would have taken 2 hours. Just for the setup, just to get the lighting right, to get the actors in the right place. They would probably use stand-ins to make sure the lighting's right. They would have to position the camera, but you did it in less than 30. And that is what I love about, you know, independent filmmaking and you in specific, because, you know, you're a creative dude and you just get the job done. Yeah. And, you know, bravo, man. It was really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing we don't have a lot of, you know, is the luxury of time. Because as you know, you make films as well, man. You know, like you're working, whenever you ask another location owner, they might tell you, you can do it, but you only got 2 hours. So now you gotta fit all this in on this little time frame. So, you know, that's one thing where, you know, I guess it kind of sucks, but at the same time, it's cool because it forces you to be more creative than you initially were. So, you know, you still get whatever you got done with the constraints that you have on you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, my last short film, I had Everett Anderson again. Hey, Everett. He was one of my leads, and he lives in Nashville now. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy from that played my bad guy. He was from Gulfport, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And then I had another lead. He was originally from Memphis, but he moved to Atlanta over last summer. So I had three people that were out of town. Had to get them all to. I live in South Haven, which is, you know, just shy of Memphis, and we got them all here. And I only had them for the weekend. No one could stay, you know, any extra day. So I had so much to do. It was probably a 3 to 4 day shoot that I needed that we could only do in two days.
2 days.
You know, and no one could stay, you know, do any overtime. None of that stuff. We just had to get everything that we needed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's it. So I've been learning that with, you know, independent filmmaking, time is really, you know, your most valuable asset, and you don't have a lot of it.
You don't, I mean, you rarely have enough of it. I mean, you rarely have enough, like I have yet to where, and you know, I'm from Jackson, Tennessee, which is about an hour from Memphis. And, you know, I'm starting to get a lot of support from some of the location owners here, but you never have it to the way you can just say, hey, I'm gonna set up and we have all day. You always have the time constraint or something where you have to move quicker than you would ever move, you know, if you had a bigger budget or something like that. So it's just the life we live that we kind of got to function through. And like with Everett and Delvin and everybody in your film, you got to have actors who are, you know, that are aware of that and, you know, are committed regardless to getting that project done with you just as much as you are.
Exactly. Filmmaking mm-hmm. is definitely, you know, it's a, you're partnering with everyone on set.
Exactly.
You're not just, as a director, you're not just the head honcho. You're not just barking orders. You depend on people, literally depend on them to help you bring the vision to life. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
But do me a favor, introduce Smith to people that don't know what it is. Let us know what it is, and we'll take a look at the trailer.
All right. Smith is a movie about a private detective who's underwhelmed mostly by working nothing but corporate assignments, and he's looking for that nice mystery per se that he can dig his teeth in and get to the bottom of, and then he finally has an out-of-town client who comes in and gets him something, but he gets himself in a little too deep behind the situation. So it's one of those nice suspense, kind of has a film noir feel to it, and I introduce Smith.
All right, let's take a look.
Can I help you?
AJ Smith?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was looking to hire a private investigator for a personal matter.
Have you heard any rumors on Ronald Milton?
Ronald Milton, he's a piece of shit. Word on the streets is he deals with this cat named Rico. Blackmailing him for coke and whatever he wants.
My husband is having an affair. And I'm pretty sure he's involved in some illegal stuff.
We're not gonna keep chasing you. If you don't visit us soon, we start visiting family.
Can I help you, mother?
I can come back if this is a bad time.
And that was Smith, which is so awesome. And shout out to Bianca. With her crazy self. I never laughed that much when she came around ever in a movie. And, you know, I saw it's apparent to me that, you know, Quentin Tarantino is one of your someone that may inspire you mm-hmm. in your style. Who else inspires you in film other than Quentin?
It's quite a few.
Who's your top three? Give me your top three. We'll play that game. If you need top five, we can do top five. That's fine.
Quentin, of course.
Okay.
You know, I'm a I like Martin Scorsese. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that. Are we talking directors or just
whoever you like?
Okay.
You can throw a wild card in there. All good.
Let me see. You stopped it with this one, man. It's so many of them out there. I actually like a lot of stuff that when it comes to just the TV world. I like a lot of stuff that Donald Glover is doing.
Oh yeah, Donald is a beast.
Yeah, he's awesome. Man, you got me on this one. I like Denis Villeneuve. I believe that's how you say his name.
We'll call him Dennis.
Dennis.
I don't know how to say his last name. We'll call him Dennis.
It's just so many of them out there.
I'm gonna give you one that I love. I love Ava. Ava DuVernay is
Ava.
One of my all time favorites.
Yeah, Ava is great.
Mm-hmm. She has Ava's such a great style. You know,
yeah, yeah, and her style. I mean, it reeks. I mean, it's, you know, even with When They See Us, that's probably my favorite project she's done.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was so acted. So, I mean, everything about that whole series, I guess it's a miniseries, is what they title it. It's just perfection. You know, it's not one that you can watch over and over again, but when I watched it, I was just in awe. It was like, man, it should have got all the Emmys or Golden Globes or whatever it came up for. But she's, you know, and her and Issa Rae are doing marvelous things in the industry right now. So,
do you remember Catherine Bigelow? She did, crap, what did she do? Oh, she did The Hurt Locker way back when. That's kind of when she kind of blew up. She did The Hurt Locker. And she did that movie with John Boyega. They were like in the 70s, and it was had something to do with racism. I forgot the name of that movie was, but Catherine Bigelow, she kind of started this. Unfortunately, for the time, the trend of hiring female directors. You know, because I think female directors should have been prominent, prominent, should be featured, should be given plenty of opportunities to direct. But unfortunately, in the industry, they just haven't. But when she kind of kicked the door open for female directors like Ava and Issa and other people like that, but she's an excellent director. Love her style as well.
Yeah.
But you've got a couple other projects coming out. I believe, you know, we talked about Closed Caption a little bit, and we have Down Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Which is your most favorite project that you are working on right now? What's your favorite?
I mean, it's Down Bad, most definitely, because it's one of those. That's actually a project that I've probably been trying to get off the ground probably the longest, because it's a personal project. It's about, you know, it's based on, you know, things growing up. I'm from a little small town called Bolivar, Tennessee. I don't know if you're aware of it. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a lot of the things growing up, you know, around that area, and friends and family that I know. Some of them might, you know, when it eventually comes out, might notice, like, he's writing that after me. But, you know, it's based on so much authenticity. And I feel like, you know, when it finally comes out and the audience sees it, you know, that they'll feel that authenticity in the show, because it's so related on so many real situations. And the cast that I was able to get for it, like a lot of the, when I was writing it, you know, I kind of had to trash the script so many times because I just could not get it to the point, you know, I was trying to be too structured. That was one script where I was trying to be too structured about it. And I just decided to, you know, get to know the characters and let the characters guide the story. And that's how I finally finished the project. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to production next week. And, awesome. You know, the leads that I cast in it, you know, I pitched them when I was writing it. So I immediately offered them the roles, and they were happy to accept. And they're elated to get to production as well, because they're so interested, excited about the story. So I can't wait to get started on that next week. And that's probably my most anticipated project.
Awesome. Give us a log line. What's it about?
Excuse me.
Give us a log line.
It's about, it's basically the, if I were to give it, that was one project where I kind of had the hardest part giving a log line, because I just wanted to say, three childhood friends living life, because that's basically what it is. I mean, it's one of those shows to where, like, it just looks like you're going through the life of these three dudes every day. Like, it's nothing plot-wise. It's just driving everything. Of course, I got a plot device driving the story, but it just seems like you're just with these guys living everyday life. So, I mean, the log line is basically three childhood friends, you know, dealing with trials and tribulations in small town America. And that's the official log line that I went with for it. But like when you see the show, I mean, I think most people kind of see where I'm coming from, because it's just, it's a movie out there that I can't think of right now that's almost, you know, similar to it, to the way you, it's almost like a hangout movie. Like you just going with these guys and through their everyday life. And that's kind of how I want the audience to feel when they're watching it. Just like you're a fly on the wall, just in there around these guys as they go through what they're going through and, you know, live every day, because the story is actually taking place in 9 consecutive days. It's like they wake up in the morning, go to sleep at night, new episode. And that's kind of how I'm doing it. And, you know, I just want it to be one of those stories that feels so authentic and so relatable that the cast just, you know, that the audience just falls in love with it.
Now, that sounds to me a lot like, of course, shades of Quentin Tarantino again with you.
Yeah.
With you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was, which, you know, it's the logline, I'm sure, is the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Where the story unfolded like a little onion that had just different layers to it.
Yeah.
And you know, the Hollywood itself was a main character in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, because when I went to go see that movie, it totally took me by surprise. Like, oh, I thought it was one thing, and it turned out to be something else.
Yeah, and it's totally different from all these other movies. And I never actually thought of that, but it's kind of, it kind of has that same formula to it. I mean, it's totally different story, but yeah, it kind of has that same story to it. The way it's just, you know, you just, they go along and, you know, things happen that just progress the story forward. And that's how, when I wrote it, you know, I was just, you know, I started that process differently than any other script that I wrote. I kind of just broke down the characters. I got to know the characters from, you know, front to back. And as soon as I started writing, I just let the characters take the story. And that's the first time that's happened. And I'm elated to how it turned out. And I just can't wait to get on set and see how this thing comes to life, see how this vision comes to life for me. Because we start that here here in about 7 days, actually.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're on a new level when it comes to your writing. Did you use the same technique when it came to your latest feature film, Closed Caption?
Yes, I used the same outline. I came up with that idea. That was another film that I did, wrote pre-COVID, more of a short film. And I was actually intending to do the Memphis Film Prize again with it.
Okay.
And then when that happened last year with the film prize, when they canceled because of COVID, I decided, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and make this a feature. And when we canceled, when we pushed postponed the Sticks season 2 originally, I just plugged in that feature for it when things were appearing to get better around July or so last year, and that's how I came up with it. So I was with my original formula, just, you know, I came up with this idea and outlined it and made that one happen.
And what is Closed Caption about? What's the log line on that?
Closed Caption is about a B movie legend. It's a guy that makes B movie horror films back in L.A. You know, he comes back home after he had a disagreement with an old business partner, and he gets back home, and that movie itch, you know, gets to him again. It's almost like a gambling addiction, and he does end up doing the same thing that got him in trouble in L.A. when he comes back home, and he ended up, you know, on a chase trying to evade these two people who are coming back after him because of these bad business dealings. So it's one of those movies about, you know, it's just another good old pursuit movie. It's kind of similar to Smith, but it's mostly about this old B-movie director. I think it's going to be a little quirky film, and I think a lot of people will like it. And we're getting the trailer ready to premiere tomorrow, matter of fact, for that film. So, yeah, while that was coming out, you know, working on Down Bad and keeping it busy, and I'm just, you know, try to keep a project, you know, in the rotation, you know, at least try to keep something coming out twice a year, and keep these projects rolling.
Now, with this project, with Closed Caption, you got the trailer coming out tomorrow. So by the time that this episode airs, It'll be already out. So we'll include that trailer into this video. For everyone listening to the podcast, we're going to invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We can actually watch the trailer. Let's take a look.
Hey, my name's Jack
Holiday.
Yeah.
Dude, me and my guys watched all your movies in college.
Tonight I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean.
What happens when I find him?
I'm gonna kill him.
Tonight I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean.
You're the basis of all the new marketing, man. That's impossible.
I've got some bad blood with some people out west. I don't need them coming here making trouble.
Tonight I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean.
But when you come to me, you're bypassing corporate America.
Tonight I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean.
You owe me. You are personally responsible.
Tonight I'm feeling mean.
I'm tired of running and hiding because you constantly screw people over.
I'm
going back home.
I'm feeling me.
We're making a movie.
Tonight
screen. I'm gonna make myself.
So I've mostly acted in horror films my whole career.
If some deserving
don't have to do with black
eyes.
Oh, I'm sorry, she comes out.
Swings at me, then I'll bust that sucker's knee. Cause tonight I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean. I'm feeling mean, I'm feeling mean. The beat is hung on me.
I'm really looking forward to that, and looking forward to The Stick season 2. Looking forward to Down Bad, especially if it sounds awesome as usual. Where can we get in touch with you, Jerron? And how can we find you, sir?
Well, all of my social media handles are under Guerrilla Filmer, just like Guerrilla Warfare with one R, Filmer. That's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. My website, misguidedperceptions.net. You can also find me on YouTube. YouTube is about to be where I kind of try to turn it, you know, under the inspiration of kind of like Issa Rae Presents. I'm about to turn my YouTube into that same thing, to where I kind of premiere a lot of my projects there in that manner. So if you search me on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe, and you'll see my I have a BTS show kind of showing people how I'm doing these productions and stuff behind the scenes, something a little bit more exclusive there. And I'm gonna have some productions starting to premiere on there soon too. So, you know, you can find me on YouTube, because that'll be where my bread and butter will be here soon.
That's awesome, man. And for people wanting to watch your films, you can check out Jerron's movies. They're on Amazon. Checklist, and They Live on the Shadows. The Sticks is on there, and Smith, of course, is on there as well, from his production company, Misguided Perceptions Media Group. So really looking forward to seeing your latest projects. And dude, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. This is it's been awesome, man. Finally, you know, able to just talk about movies and stuff. We have to do this again.
Oh yeah, most definitely, anytime.
All right, well, thank you, and this will conclude today's episode of The Rod Kirby Show. Thank you all, and good night, America. Peace out.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of The Rod Kirby Show. Did you know that you can watch this entire interview along with movie trailers and additional content on my YouTube channel? Check out the channel and subscribe by hitting the link in the episode description. For more filmmaking tips and advice, visit my blog at www.rodkirby.com. Thanks again for listening, and remember to write, shoot, produce, and repeat.